T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I couldn't do anything for last year for Cubs, you know. I really loved the fans and then this organization, but I couldn't do anything. So I really want to do something for the Chicago and then the Cubs.
Middays on the Score.
That's Yu Darvish. Nice to hear him. We don't really hear from him all that much. That was from WGN-TV. Yeah, nice to actually hear from Yu Darvish. And he wants to do something for Chicago and the Cubs. Okay.
Trying to find if he speaks other languages, like for sure whether he speaks other languages than Japanese and English, and I can't quite find it. I would bet he does, but that's just a guess.
He said last year he was at 88 in the bullpen this time of year. This year, 91, 92. Velocity is going up, and he and Tommy Hotovy are also comparing spin rate, and we know he is a high spin rate fastball thrower. Correct me if I'm wrong.
As far as I understand it, you want to ride the top of the zone kind of stuff.
Because we were looking at it when we were trying to figure out what was wrong with him last year, and we saw that all of his pitches, his spin was down, now that we have all of that. Now that we know that all that data is available.
I mean, you asked why we weren't concerned about Yu Darvish throwing 88 or having lower spin rates when he came into his 2018 season last year. And my answer was, or his spring training, really, my answer was because it's spring training. But I guess in thinking about it, what do we take out of spring training performances, really? Almost nothing. Are you healthy? That's one thing I need to know coming out of spring training. If you're not healthy, is it just that dead arm thing that happens to guys like we talked about? And it's velocity. I mean, if one thing starts to actually worry you in spring training baseball, it's where guys are sitting with the heater, where the fastball's at.
Also, so much of it is knowing what somebody is using spring training for and using those innings for and actually talking to the player. And what's great is now that we're going down there for an extended period of time, we're going to get to do this. We're going to get to hang out with some guys, get to find out some of these things. But I remember being around teams in the past where a guy would absolutely get torched.
Just lit. And that's one of my favorite parts of spring training.
The guy just gets destroyed.
Absolutely.
And then he goes up. And then he runs, you know, goes and runs foul pole to foul pole on the warning track while the game is going on.
Right.
And he said, no, I felt good. I talked to one guy, I said, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, I only threw changeups.
Yeah. Like 15 straight.
Right. And all I cared is how that felt coming out of my hand. Huh. I'm just trying to get the feel for it. I changed my grip a little bit. And that's it. So it was fine.
You can tell sometimes, not always, but you can tell sometimes when a guy's working on it, because as he gives up his like third double into the gap that sounds like a shotgun blast because nobody's in a spring training stadium early on, won't be that way for the Cubs, but nobody's around for some of these games, and he doesn't even do the pitcher turn. You know it's like a high fly ball or a homer, you get the and then it's a
I know it well.
You look over. Yes. Which shoulder did you look over when you were throwing and gave that thing up? Because I went right shoulder when I gave up a long one. But when the pitcher doesn't turn, you go, oh, he's probably working on something. He didn't even care where that ball ended up. Right. He's working on a changeup and he doesn't turn at all. He just wants the ball
back. All that matters is how it left his hand and what spot did it reach. He doesn't care where the ball ends up. But yes, that's unfortunately a move I know extremely well.
A lot of muscle memory on that move. You and me.
I
actually might be more flexible on that side in my neck because of having done that for as long as I have. Like, I can't go left the same way I could go right on that. There's another, with as many free agents still out there as we've got in an offseason, another offseason in baseball where we're waiting for some of the biggest storylines to occur as pitchers and catchers report. I think it's today for the A's, and everybody in baseball will have had pitchers and catchers report by Valentine's Day, and we wait for Manny Machado and for Bryce Harper. There is a White Sox storyline that I've found pretty interesting over the last couple of weeks that I'd kind of been waiting to hop onto, and it's a pitcher in the White Sox rotation that I think is a pretty important piece of where they're at right now. And it's one that's actually going to throw not Michael Kopech, as big as his recovery is for the White Sox, and as much starch as that really did take out of where this season could go for the Sox in 19, it's Carlos Rodon. And there's a couple of reasons for this, and most of it has to do with this offseason and what we haven't seen. Carlos is a Scott Boras client. Carlos is a guy who has been as dominant over stretches of 5, 6, 10, 11 starts, and then just not been able to put those together for longer stretches of time. He's got one of the best sliders from a left-hander in baseball. It's top 5, top 3 if you like to get all kinds of randy about it. But where Carlos Rodon can go, what he's able to establish, and where the White Sox want to go with Carlos Rodon, I think is going to be a really interesting thing to watch this season. Because what they've done, depending on where Machado signs, is given them a chance, given themselves a chance to kind of straddle a position. You can get better and move some pieces off the team to get more assets if you want to. You can, if Nate Jones pitches really well, move Nate Jones. You can, if some of the bullpen pieces pick one, some of the veterans pitch well, you can move him. What's the decision you want to make on a 26-year-old Carlos Rodon who reaches free agency in 2022, who is a left-handed pitcher with that kind of velocity if he's healthy, who could put a season together and wears a jersey with no undershirt the way he does, that kind of powerful chest hair, that's an asset that because of Kopech likely coming back next year, because of Dylan Cease probably pitching. I mean, the flowery language around Dylan Cease. I mean, I heard James Fegan on with Mully and Hall earlier this morning. The expectation is there.
Dane Dunning lurks as well.
Dane Dunning lurks. He's 25, I think. So at some point, you've got to press the gas pedal on Dane Dunning. I'm just saying that's a position in which the White Sox have a bunch of guys they'd like to throw major league innings at some point in the next year and a half.
Yeah, but you got to give
actual baseball.
You have to give Rodon an opportunity to be great.
Yes.
I mean, that's a top 3 overall pick, right?
Fourth overall. Third overall.
Third overall. His xFIP last year was 5.4.
Yes, it was. And that's because the walks were there and the strikeouts were too. I mean, it was an up and down bouncy season for him, short as it was. Some of those starts, though, I mean, just watching Carlos Rodon mow down Cleveland Indians over and over again, watching him work through some lineups, he can be dominant. And you look at the asset there, you look at the ability, the place the White Sox have put themselves in while rebuilding, while waiting for 2.5 weeks to get Eloy Jimenez up, whatever he ends up coming up in the season, it'll be 2.5 weeks, it'll be Chris Bryanted. That's an interesting piece to me because of where you can lean with that. So are the rest of the veterans on that team. But as much as we've made Manny Machado, and as much as Manny Machado is...
The context changes... If all of a sudden Manny Machado announces he's coming to the White Sox on a $250 million deal. So if then you've got a here and now issue with your rotation. Then everything's moved up a little
bit. I think so. But what the rest of the rotation is kind of mitigates that here and now question as well. Ivan Nova and Manny Banuelos at the bottom 4 and 5, you're asking Lucas Giolito to establish himself. Lucas Giolito needs an arrow to tick up for him this season. I mean, there's really no question about it. And the Ronaldo Lopez situation needs to resolve itself in a positive manner as it regards being a starting pitcher and not somebody who vacillates back and forth because of control issues. So while Manny Machado does change the context, obviously, of the 2019 White Sox, you still have a rotation because they're independent of the offense with questions about how much you could move and how... you know, kind of creative you want to be with a guy that you may that will hit free agency. Carlos will hit free agency. That's happening. There's no extension going on there. At least I wouldn't expect it because of who his agent is. These ties matter.
Yeah, you don't worry about guys hitting free agency like they used to because none of them signed anywhere.
No, and in 2022, Carlos is going to be like, that's a bad year to hit free agency with where the CBA's feeling right now. I mean, I feel bad for Carlos. But the other thing about him too, I don't know if you feel this way. Working in minor league ball as long as you did, you probably didn't see it as much, but you've covered plenty of baseball. And plenty of sports as it is. The guy who has the kid, right? The first-time dad, something changes about that guy. Obviously, I mean, you know, your father. Something changes about that person.
He doesn't sleep.
He doesn't sleep at all. And then once the sleep finally gets back to you, like if you're a ball player, you're not sleeping. You're on the road. You're playing baseball. Someone else is going to have to take, you know, the situation is different for you and B if they ever have a kid. And it's just going to be a different situation. There's like growth. There's maturity that happens there. It's a weird thing. I've seen it with a couple of guys, and it hasn't always benefited in performance, but the mindset clearly changes.
Has anybody ever tracked that metrically? Has anybody ever
probably
said
yeah,
that there
would,
is?
We measure everything in baseball. I would imagine somebody has tracked that metrically.
If there is a statistical change when somebody is a first-time father, depending on what
there's
level
gotta
of baseball
be. There's,
performance.
There's statistical measures on teams that fire hitting coaches.
I know.
I mean, that's so it's got to matter. So, well, it's got to be measured.
So, so in the context of Rodon, when was that? When are we?
When did he have the kid? Late last season? Early off season? It's been a little while. It's been a couple, I think.
Yeah, you kind of get used to it after a while, and then you forget how miserable it was. And then what happens? You have another one. Because you had forgotten how miserable it was to have the first one.
How do you forget? I've heard this brought up before. I don't understand how you forget.
You just do. Otherwise, you'd never have another kid, and the human race would disappear from the
it's
planet.
It's like an evolutionary
thing. I'm sure
thing.
That's how everybody thinks about children.
Well, no, it is. You have to. If you don't black out the misery and the lack of sleep and all of that, you would never have another kid. So I do
because
think,
of the misery and the lack of sleep.
Yeah, I get that. There's something adaptive to your brain erasing all of that. You're like, oh yeah, let's do this again.
All you remember the cute moments,
or you have
the
all
Instagrams,
or you have all the money, and you have like live-in help or somebody like that, or you've got a nursery and somebody there to do all the everything.
Explains Philip Rivers.
If you have all the money and somebody can do everything else for you, and it's not on you. And the other thing is you forget diaper genie smell.
Diaper genie?
Yeah.
What is diaper genie?
It's basically like making a diaper sausage link.
It's like a
what?
Human centipede of dirty diapers.
What are you talking about?
Okay, the diaper genie is a specialized garbage can.
Oh, it's a thing.
It's a white cylindrical garbage can with a special plastic insert tube that you tie off. You place the dirty diaper in the diaper genie. You turn the circle three times, you turn the wheel, and then the dirty diaper is trapped in the scented plastic and goes into the body of the cylinder.
This is a thing that
it's encased like sausage.
Correct. So when the diaper genie becomes full, you turn the cutting blade that cuts the sausage, you tie that off, then you empty the diaper genie and you have this long sort of twisted sausage of dirty diapers that you then take down three flights of stairs to the condo actual garbage in the back.
That's a thing that actually exists?
That's your life.
I feel like I'm being gaslit right now.
No, no, no.
Like you guys came up with like, hey, here's a product that we'll just make up. Like on Friday when Rosie was in, like, we'll just lie to Connor about a thing and gaslight him.
Nope. And then the diaper genie smell is the intensely fragrant, like whatever that chemical is with underlying just that barnyardy sort of it's just enough of both. It's unmistakable and you can never get it out of your olfactory
like
system.
Scented trash bags kind of
exactly, but a powerful enough dirty diaper is enough to overpower it. You know you're in a room with a full diaper genie.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
I've never seen one of these before. I didn't know they existed.
You?
They've got to have... Well, I've got friends with kids now. I've never seen the diaper. Do you hide it when people come over?
You empty it.
Do you squirrel it away?
No, but you definitely want to empty it.
Well, you got to empty the diaper genie, sure.
Yeah, but it's that's the kind of thing where once that is out of your life... I actually... It was like 3 weeks ago or something. I was looking at the very back of the bathroom closet in the kids' bathroom, and there was an unused diaper genie refill that was stuck all the way in the back there.
Did you have some sort of visceral reaction?
Yes, you're like, oh, yeah, that flashbacks. Thing. Get that out of here. If anybody needs one, I'm happy to give it to them. I don't know. They probably have something better now because everything gets improved.
I looked up diaper genie because I really thought I was being gaslit for a moment. They still exist, and you can snag one for $30. And it looks like a year-long supply of the bags for about 80. There's your number.
This segment brought to you by National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. Visit Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Schaumburg, February 22nd to 24th. The nation's largest upland hunting and conservation expo focuses on bird dogs, wild game cooking, and hunting heritage. With over 400 vendors and great seminars, Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic has something for you. Visit pheasantfest.org. We have football to get to.
We do.
There are some football issues. There is some light that has been shown on why the Bears were awful, and we had football over the weekend that apparently a lot of people were watching.
I have consumed some of it on Instagram. It was not part of my Vegas viewing, and I'm curious as to why it wasn't. I don't think it was my fault. I think it might have been Vegas's.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
All right, good. We'll do that next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Brokovici never saw the man coming, and he is lit up. My goodness. Sean Washington with the stick.
This has been the issue with Brokovici: awareness and ball security when pressure comes in the pocket. Wow, he was completely blindsided. He had no idea.
Berkovici goes down and loses his helmet, and there was no penalty called. The Alliance of American Football made its debut.
It's real.
And it wasn't awful.
Being in Vegas all weekend and then flying back during most of the games yesterday, I wasn't able to watch any of it. I saw as many clips on Instagram. I've seen that hit, obviously, seven or eight times. And I guess the ratings were out of this world. Really good debut for the AAF. Here's what I thought was kind of weird in talking with you guys in the meeting this morning. I know we all caught smatterings of it, or you guys all caught smatterings of it. I didn't see. I know it was available to bet because Joe Ostrowski has already devised a strategy to fade Mike Singletary games, which...
Well, it's not just Singletary. It's also fading my guy.
Christian Hackenberg, mm-hmm. who I did not realize was on the same team as Singletary. Hackenberg is still not responsible for a single offensive point by any professional football team. So good on you, Christian Hackenberg. I didn't see the lines for the AAF up at either of the sports books that I was at in Vegas. Not to say that you couldn't bet on them.
How could you set a line on something that hadn't existed before?
I have no idea. No clue at all. But I figured some would be up on the board, but they weren't. It was just all college football games. I'm not saying, like, again, you could go bet on them. I could have found something on the AAF and bet it if I wanted to. But they're not up on the MGM Sportsbook board while I was there. I found that interesting.
Now, if you remember that that execrable XFL started and did some numbers at the beginning, and that was just a joke. The production was a joke, and they had the strippers out there in cheerleading outfits and that whole thing. They were urging ultra-violence on the field and all that, and that eventually went away because it was unsustainable. The whole he-hate-me thing, you remember that?
The business model was unsustainable too, correct? I mean, there was a massive failure on an infrastructure level for them that led to their downfall, as well as nobody giving a damn after 2 weeks of bad
There were
football.
Some broadcast innovations, though, that came of it. That's because true. I remember from watching the 30 for 30, there was no sky cam until the XFL. That was one thing that the NFL stole from them. So if nothing else, the NFL can pilfer whatever ideas they're using.
Well, that's, and they should.
That is what's going to happen.
There's two or three here.
Chances are this league will fail too, because other pro football leagues generally fail.
However, I this one's different. It may be different. NFL.com, their front page this morning was AAF football. Like results, scores, the Hilltoppers beat the Mountain Goats or something, and that was on the front page of NFL.com. So if they got interested in investing some into a developmental league, which I don't know if they would or not, a lot of that would have to do with the future prospects of college football and the ability to play it at that level. But if they got interested and started supplementing it or endorsing it at least, don't you think it would have more staying power than the XFL passed?
Potentially. I'm not necessarily writing it off completely, but there will be things that I think that are eventually adopted by the NFL. And like you say, Skycam was XFL. The NFL got its instant replay review system from the USFL. And here are some other things that might be in the right direction.
Okay.
No extra points. You got to go for two. No kickoffs. Teams get possession on their own 25. So they're taking kickers out of it, which has always been my idea.
Yeah.
No onside kicks. Instead of an onside kick, you get 4th and 12 on your own 28-yard line.
4th and 12. Now, the piece we read a handful of weeks ago, that was a 4th and 15 attempt.
This is 4th and 12 on your own 28.
All right.
And overtime is somewhat similar to college. Each team gets the ball on the 10. They aren't allowed to kick field goals. They've sped up the play clock. It's 35 seconds instead of 40. No TV timeouts to keep games under 2.5 hours. And there is a sky judge. The sky judge is an official, a 9th referee who's in the booth and is constantly reviewing all game action. The sky judge is empowered to make calls or overturn penalties in case the on-field officials miss them. So this is pretty interesting, and it sounds somewhat common sense to have a deus ex machina,
yeah,
to have the god of the machine that is able to just see something. It's his or her job to see something and work through a call. And they're doing it transparently.
This is cool. This is the other clip that I've seen, other than that dude getting his helmet launched 40 feet into the air.
So listen in to a decision being made by the sky judge.
Listen in. Terry Valenti, the replay
official.
He's
rolling on the ground. He's using the ground to keep it in there. The ground helps him. We're going to let it stand.
So she's going to agree with the call on the field. No touchdown. She feels that the ground helped the catch at the end of the catch.
Definitely touched. Ball is down on the ground sliding. Okay, we're going to wait a minute, 1 second. We've got an elbow down. It's got it and touched. Nope, we're going to overturn this and reverse this to a catch in the end zone for a score by Orlando. He's got possession. He tucks it in. His elbow hits. The ball is in control in his arms. Okay. We've got a score.
Now, that's really cool.
That'd be awesome.
For a lot of reasons.
That'd
because
be awesome.
Terry Valenti, she went into it thinking one thing.
Yep.
Then saw clear visual evidence that he was down with possession,
uh-huh,
and you heard her change her mind.
I want that for NFL football. I want that for Major League Baseball. I think fans would be very much interested in having the actual rules given to them, the officiating given to them, so they're not screaming and losing their damn minds when they don't know what a catch is.
There has been some display of talent.
Vic Fangio, the former Bears defensive coordinator, now the head coach of the Denver Broncos, he's never really put much of a filter on his football thoughts.
No.
We always wondered if that would prevent him from getting a head coaching job, but he took out a flamethrower and used it on some former Chicago Bears executives, whether he meant to or not, as he talked about what his job is going to be with the Broncos and how his experience is informing the work he's doing now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He talked to Woody Page of the Gazette. And this is Vic. If I say I'm not going to be patient, you and everybody else will think I'm going to make some knee-jerk short-term decisions that won't have long-term benefits. John Gruden. What we've got to do, I believe, is let's go out there and evaluate this team. Find out where we need help, make some good choices for the future, not just for today. If I'm making sense, I'm not looking to go 4-12 or 5-11 thinking that we're rebuilding, but we must realize that 2 years from now, 3 years, that what we did in the 2019 season was why we are at that point. And according to NFL.com, it says to take the Broncos from mediocrity back to respectability, Fangio intends to draw from wisdom learned in Chicago, where he was the defensive coordinator for 4 seasons under John Fox and Matt Nagy. Here's what happened to the Bears before I got
this
there.
Is so great.
What they were doing was putting Band-Aids on every little problem, hoping they would be a good team the next year, Fangio explained. By the time we got there, they sucked. They were old. No young talent. No nothing. I've coached on 2 expansion teams in Carolina and with the Texans.
Expansion teams.
And our roster on defense when I was hired by the Bears was worse than those expansion team defenses. We can't let that happen here. We can't do everything just to get to 8-8 now and be 3-13 in 2021. Does that mean we won't get a veteran free agency that will help for a year or two? We can do that, but we can't go and throw a bunch of bleep against the wall and hope it sticks.
Damn, I miss Vic already.
Wow.
Well, no one's going to top that.
Let's, wow. Should we fact check Vic a little bit?
Go ahead. By the time we got there, they sucked.
I'm going to fact check Vic a little bit. I have for you, in descending order, the list of leading tacklers from the 2015 Bears, Vic Fangio's first year as defensive coordinator. You tell me if Vic was right or if Vic was wrong. Leading the team in 59 tackles that season, Christian Jones, then Adrian Amos, then Shea McClellan, Kyle Fuller, Pernell McPhee, Lamar Houston, Tracy Porter, Jonathan Anderson, Antrell Roll, score regular?
Yeah.
Willie Young, Sam Acho, Jarvis Jenkins, Chris Przinski, John Timu, head 20.
Oh, Chris Przinski.
Bryce
so
Callahan is on this list. Harold Jones, Corte, Eddie Goldman, Will Sutton, Mitch Unrein, Alan Ball, Sherrick McManus, and Leroy Reynolds. Also, something named Bruce Gaston had a couple
Bruce
of
Gaston,
tackles.
Yes, the St. Rita product.
Jay Ratliff had a couple of tackles. Jared Allen played three games that year. Yeah, I think mostly Vic was right.
Yeah, they sucked.
I think mostly Vic was right.
They sucked.
My God.
Some of those players got better. Others did not.
You see from Vic and from the AAF, the Alliance of American Football, the American Alliance of Football, the AAF.
Alliance of American Football.
That's right. The Magicians Alliance. From that, we see that the two things we like here are Vic's transparency and honesty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And from the AAF, we like that referee work, the sky judge.
Transparency
and honesty. There's a major player in the NFL over the last couple of decades who, in an interview with the Fainru Wadas of the world, came out with a little bit of transparency and honesty throughout his career, and it's affected his relationship with the sport, with those who watch the sport, and with viewership in general. I found the piece very interesting.
That is something we are going to be getting to a little bit later on in the show, because next up we have Mark Lazarus of The Athletic, who is going to talk some red-hot Blackhawks with us as they chase the final seed in the Western Conference. Kinda.
Hell yes.
Kinda. There are other teams with games in hand, and there's more than one team here, but we're gonna enjoy this while we can and go Bears. So we'll talk hockey with him next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We're not where we want to be. We gotta keep getting better. We can. There's more. So we're happy we won. We got the 2 points we dearly needed, and we'll go back to work tomorrow and get prepared for Tuesday, and that's the mentality we should have as a group.
Well, that's very straightforward. They are happy they won, and then they will try to keep winning.
Because the whole winning thing. We're going to keep that up.
Because it's good, and they are happy. Mark Lazarus covers the streaking Chicago Blackhawks for The Athletic. He is on Twitter at Mark Lazarus, and he joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Hello, Mark.
Hello, boys. How you doing?
Great. Let me ask you this. Regardless of the chase for whatever playoff spot may or may not be available to them, considering some of these moves that have been made and even the news today of Colin Delia signing a contract extension.
And Dylan Sakura getting called up just a little while ago.
Dylan Sakura just getting called up. Are the Blackhawks, regardless of whether or not they salvage this season with a playoff run, are they closer to winning the Stanley Cup than they were when they started the season?
Well, you couldn't be farther away from winning the Stanley Cup when they started the season. They were, you know, everything looked like it was a disaster. They were old. They were slow. They are so much better positioned now than they were, you know, when Joel Quenneville was fired. That the roster is so different now. You have the Dylan Strome trade. You bring in a guy like Drake Caggiulli. You got rid of the Manning and Ruda contracts, which were albatrosses around your neck. You've seen that Colin Delia can be a number one goalie potentially, and you signed him for 3 years at $1 million a year, which is incredibly cheap. This team, you got Carl Dahlstrom emerging as a viable defenseman. Slater Cuckoo, Connor Murphy looks like a good top four defenseman now. He's the best defenseman on the team this year. Joakim Harju, you know, is still out there. Everything is so much better now than it was back in October and November, and when things really fell bad in December. Stanley Cup's still a long way away, but you are closer to contention now than you certainly were over the past 12 months.
In your opinion, Mark, what's the part of Jeremy Colleton's strategy, mood, personality that's bitten, taken hold that's been the most important part of the last, 3 months?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you never know how much a coach is really impacting things. I mean, you know, up until 2 or 3 weeks ago, everyone was saying that, you know, there's no reaction from the team and he's not buying in, and now everyone's buying in. I think the buy-in was there from the start. Once the shell shock kind of wore off for the veterans after Quenneville was fired, everybody likes the guy. He's open communicator. He talks to everybody, tells you exactly why you're in or not in the lineup, why you're playing this many minutes. He's really big on sitting down and talking to the guys after games, after practices. Everybody knows where they stand. It took some time to adjust to the system. They're still adjusting to the system. Let's not sugarcoat this. They've won 7 in a row, but they've given up like 40 shots on goal in 5 of those games. This is still not a good defensive team. There's a long way to go before they get better. But the buy-in's always there. Even during those long losing streaks, those 2 8-game losing streaks, you know, they were falling behind 3-0, 4-0 in the first period, and they always fought back. They didn't have the talent to kind of win. They didn't quite have that yet, but they were always fighting back. The buy-in's been there from the start. I don't think that Colleton was a problem. I don't think he's the sole reason that things are going better, but you know, you look at the decision to put Gustafson on the top of the power play and let this power play one unit that's just tearing up the world right now play 90 seconds every power play. There's decisions that are being made that are putting the Blackhawks in a better position to succeed. There's no doubt about that.
The Delia contract is fascinating because, like you say, if in fact he takes that next step and emerges as their number one goaltender, that is a very team-friendly contract. I've watched him make some spectacular saves and some spectacular flurries of saves where he's called upon it point blank to recover and play off his own rebound. I've also seen in the same games, the next time down the ice, a soft goal. Is that a concentration level, or is that simply his sight lines? Is it a little bit of everything? Where do you see that last bit of development occurring?
Well, I mean, you see that with any goalies. I mean, you saw that with Corey Crawford up until just a few years ago when he finally kind of stopped giving up one soft goal in the second period of most games, it seemed. I mean, these guys are really good shooters now. Even if it's unscreened and you're shooting from that left circle, if you roof a shot over the guy's shoulder, it's really hard to stop that puck.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some development he needs to do. He's only 24. Last season, he started the year in the ECHL. I mean, he's come so far in such a short amount of time. You have to kind of allow for some steps back every now and then. But the overall picture, this kid's got such a good head on his shoulders. He's so confident. He's smart. He's into the science of goaltending. He's going to be a good goalie for a long time. I think you see how technically sound he is. He'll be fine. You could tell the mentality is there to be a number one goalie. And even if he's the backup, if Corey Crawford comes back next year and he's the backup at $1 million, that's a steal. Up this year, he's getting $3 million with a no-movement clause. So whether he's the number one or the number two, that's a terrific contract for the Blackhawks.
You've mentioned Crawford now twice, and talk about Delia. I think that's where we have to head next. What does that mean? Delia is now signed for twice as long as Corey Crawford is. Should Blackhawks fans read anything into this contract as it pertains to Corey Crawford?
Not necessarily. I mean, you need to have some kind of stability going forward because Cam Ward's not going to be back here next year, probably. That was a one-year stopgap solution. And there's not a ton of depth in the system. Anton Forsberg's playing pretty well in Rockford. But we saw last year that he's really not NHL caliber. At least he wasn't at this last year. So you can't put a lot of stock in him. You really need three goalies. I mean, the Hawks have shown year after year, even before Crawford had the concussion issues, he would get hurt every year. That's how Carling emerged. That's how Antti Raanta emerged. Ray Emery a few years back in 2013. You have to have a really good number two, even if you have a really good number one. And when your number one is in such an uncertain situation as Crawford, you really need to have a number two that you can rely on.
When you've been able to watch practices, I'm just curious about, Colleton, in his own words, has been sort of anodyne. There isn't really much there. Have you noticed anything different, the way practices are running, the way that the tone and feel of a Colleton team as compared and contrasted to a Quenneville team?
Well, there's more teaching involved. It's less of the drills and kind of just shaking off the lactic acid. The practices are so valuable to him because he keeps adding things to the system, whereas Quenneville had everything established and it was just kind of, you know, muscle memory at that point. So you see, like, in a morning skate, he doesn't run lines. He's actually working on the power play because that's valuable practice time for him. So in that vein, it's different, but he kind of has a similar vein to Quenneville. Actually, when things are going bad or things are going good, he'll go out there and he'll just have like a goofy practice where they just scrimmage all day, or they play 3-on-3 with short nets, or he'll do a shootout, whatever, to kind of get the guys in a good mood, get them going, get them feeling good about themselves. He has that same kind of knack for knowing the where his team is mentally and how to approach that. Sometimes they need to be drilled hard and have battle drills to kind of get that competitive fire back. Sometimes they need to goof off and screw around in a practice. It really changes his practice to practice. He has a good feel for where this team's at. And the guys seem to enjoy being out there. You know, they're all lingering on longer. You know, Patrick Kane started that with the young guys a couple of years ago, where he would just stay out and practice and they'd play all these kinds of games and things like that to work on their skill. Jonathan Toews is starting to become a part of that because he saw that. He wanted to do something like that. It's a loose practice. It's not like Plainville's practices were drills. It was fast. It was short. Colleton's a little more standing around time, but they're having fun out there and they're enjoying themselves.
Talking Blackhawks with Mark Lazarus of The Athletic. You wrote in your piece this morning on The Athletic about Alex DeBrincat, his work from the left circle, the Alex Ovechkin spot, as you put it on the power play. And the quote I really liked from DeBrincat was, for me, it's pretty much just whack it and just hope it goes in. That is hockey player speak if I've ever heard it. What about your estimation of his skill level has changed this season, if at all, and how does he fit into the looseness you were kind of talking about?
Well, that's the beauty of the one-timer is you don't know where it's going, so neither does the goalie. So that's why it always works. You kind of expected some kind of a sophomore slump from him this year. It's just inevitable, and guys figure out goal scores and how to defend them. He's been better than he was last year. Last year, remember, he had like a few hat tricks last year, so he scored 28 goals, but they tend to come in bunches. This year, he's just scoring consistently. Like every other game, it seems like he's getting a big goal. He's always in the right spot. He's still, we know how he's not big. We know he's not that fast. He just has this incredible knack for being in the right spot at the right time, finding open ice, and he has such a good shot. I mean, this guy's going to be a 40-goal scorer for a decade. I mean, he is absolutely legitimate. There are some things you just can't teach, and he has that uncanny ability to find open ice and to capitalize on it. And when you're out there playing with playmakers like Patrick Kane and Dylan Strom, guys who can just make these great passes, Eric Gustafson, he's going to be a force in that power play for years. He's doing what Artemi Panarin did. He plants himself in that left spot. The penalty killer's got to go look at everybody else because you can't take your eyes off of Kane. You can't just let Toews and Strome stand unattended at the net. And these guys can thread these passes through the middle, through all that clogged up penalty killing, and then Brinkett's all there wide alone. He's just got to whack it in.
Where are we on the enigma that Brandon Saad has been? What more do we know now that we've got more of a sample, more data? It's always been confusing to me that a guy that looked like he could be a genuine power forward type, just strong on his skates and can play in both directions, and was an all-star in Columbus, right? And then all of a sudden just wasn't, you know, he's a healthy scratch, or is he's just not working hard enough? Has he gotten the message that there's still so much value in there to be realized?
I think so. I mean, he's been playing a lot better lately. He's now in a third line role. He's not playing with super skilled guys. He's out there with Marcus Kruger, Brendan Perlini, David Camp before he got hurt. Which is good because the Hawks have been able to find a third line that can score, because Brandon Saad still can score and he is scoring. We're seeing him be more aggressive, making those power moves in the net. Because you're right, sometimes you just see him make this incredible power move in the net. It's like, well, why are you doing that every night? You should be Mariannosa. But he doesn't, the knock on him, for what it's worth, has always been that he doesn't have that drive, that he just doesn't bring it like that every night, and he's tough to motivate, and he's out there just playing and coasting. I don't know if that's the case. I've asked him point blank about that, and he says, that's just, my personality isn't, he's not Jonathan Toews. He's not going to go out there and drop an F-bombs and slamming sticks. That's just not the way he's wired. But he has every tool you could want for a hockey player. His size, he's so fast, he's so strong, you can't knock him off the puck. He's a terrific defender. Even when he's not playing well offensively, he's still a terrific defensive forward. At $6 million, you need him to score. Lately, he's scoring. So you hope that this is the way going forward. The way he's played this last month is the way he's going to play going forward. But it always seems to run hot and cold with him. It just seems to be the player he is.
Mark, thanks for the time, man. This is good.
Yeah, appreciate it.
You got it, guys.
That is Mark Lazarus of The Athletic. We have the Midday Midway coming up. I have a perfectly valid reason to be frightened about sending your kids to school as if we needed another one. I also have, I want you to think, in which state do we have the most deadly auto accidents involving elderly drivers?
Okay.
Think about that.
Yeah.
And we've got an issue with Uranus.
Well, have for a while now. I've been meaning to bring it up. The wildlife has run amok in a certain state. The scientific theory that's out there that scares me the most, and a really cool story about a baseball legend we lost this last week as well. The Midday Midway is next. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.